Good morning, everybody. So the title of my talk, oops, wrong slide, sorry. Sorry. Dina unfortunately couldn't come, so I'm substituting at the last moment. So the talk is it's a little bit provocative. We would like to talk today about constraint invariant order coding. And it will be not a lot of data, but a lot of speculation. Some data, but I would like to propose some ideas about constraint invariant order coding that had been discussed previously by Kevin. And this topic has been, there was a lot of discussion about what's actually responsible for order coding. And the story started, at least for me, a long time ago in 2001 when we published this paper. I will go to the formal introduction to my story, but this is the recording of many mitral cells to many orders. So we recorded 460 cell order pairs, and out of this number, 136 had excited responses, and we put them on this graph. And red is excitation, blue is inhibition, it's relatively to the spontaneous firing rate. That is completely different now. Now I need to apologize that it has been recorded in awake state, sorry. So it's in awake state, and they ordered by the sequence, by the latency of the responses. And this graph puzzled me a lot. So I was thinking about this graph, you know, since we published it, and if you think that we recorded randomly, kind of, from unbiased population of the cell, that's probably wrong. Then one order should evoke out of 50,000 mitral tartar cells should evoke 15,000 excited responses. So we change this axis, and this is distribution of the responses. It's a huge amount of data for one SNF. Look, 15 cells telling something. So what are they telling? Is this all information is important? What's going on? Do animal listening to all of this? If we cut some of this, you know, what's important here? What's not important? What's are the coding? What these cells, 15,000 cells that firing in one order representation, what are telling us? That's the question that kind of bothered me for a long time. And we've been thinking, and we decided to kind of approach to see what's in this representation, what is invariant, what is actually essential for transmitting some important information. What are the main properties of the order, if you think about it? It's identity and concentration. This is very basic. We can talk about valency, we can talk about attractiveness, pleasantness, many other problems. But for each order, there is concentration and there is identity. I know this order is X. It's what is it for animal? It's hard to explain, but at least for humans, even without naming, we can discriminate different orders. So what is not concentration? That's identity. That's my kind of definition. What when we change concentration, something remains constant. And how the identity and the concentration are coded? So we've been thinking a lot how the identity coded, and that's the kind of, we're proposing the following model. If you look at the imaging data, and Kevin already showed this slide, so I will be kind of repeating similar ideas. This is from Tom Boza paper in 2004. If you look at this slide, these two patterns show the response to two different orders. But these patterns show the response to the same order at different concentration. Please note that it's not my data, and I took it from the paper, but this data has been normalized. So it's not that this glomerular at low concentration became weaker, just some of them became stronger. So this is became, it's more or less the same concentration, or the same activity here, but this becomes stronger than others. So you can see that these patterns are different. Some of them, some feature remains the same, but some are different. So how brain put these two patterns into a different category and these into the same category but different concentration? That's the question. Let's just schematize problem. So we have the activity pattern of the glomerula. 12 glomerulus, 2 active, we increase concentration, 4 active, then 6 active. In reality, it's actually even harder because we scramble the intensity of individual glomeruli, and as I showed, some of those who have been active at the low concentration are actually not the strongest at the high concentration. So how can we put all these patterns into the same category of the same order identity if we look at these patterns? And of course, we see that these two glomeruli are the same, but without this tag, what tells us that these two glomeruli and this belongs to, let's say, coffee or other apple? And the idea is actually very simple. We propose that that's actually done in time. Those who activated in at the lowest concentration activated always first. So glomerulus H and F activated first, and then middle concentration H, F, A, G, H, F first, and the same thing at the highest concentration. So if we know the first two glomeruli, we know that it's order H, F. So we don't want to now focus on it. Is it, so we call this kind of coding primacy coding. It's maybe the number of glomerulus, first initial number of glomerulus, or maybe the time window. It's still an open question, but important point here, that this small time window or small number of glomerulus are necessary and sufficient for order identification. And as next point, that these glomerulus are irrelevant. So, and that's basically, that's how the code built. So when you're looking on the whole picture, if you want to know the identity, look only on the first few. So today we're going to talk, speculate about, so this code has concentration invariance. I would like to speculate a little bit about the mechanism that's responsible for production of such a code, how the code can be reread, and much better story Kevin can tell, I briefly mentioned this. What are the code features, why we actually should think about such a code, and the most important, we try to prove that the window of relevant information is short and we actually have some basis to talking about such code. Oops, so, no, that wouldn't be talked today, okay. So the very simple model how the code can be built. Animal, at least vertebrates, get order into the nose by inhalation, and this inhalation and this exhalation. So the odor appears on the epithelium, not like image on the retina. It always appears gradually, and the concentration of the nose increases gradually. This is a long time. So the inhalation is about, you know, from 50 to 100 milliseconds on a spike time level, it's a long time. So the concentration builds gradually. So the first glomeruli that got excited are the glomeruli who are the first receptors that got excited are receptors with the highest affinity at low concentration. So if you increase, if concentration increases, you recruit more and more receptors with a low affinity. So first high affinity, later low affinity. What's interesting here that, so the spiking of activity is a function of, activity is a function of affinity, latency of activity. So what's interesting, if you increase concentration of the external order, the steepness of the slopes goes higher, but the same cells excite in the same sequence, but a little bit earlier. What's interesting that you excite the next cells that was not excited by low concentration, but the first sequence remained the same. Very, very simple model, so the timing is a function of concentration. That actually has been tested, and we tested it if this is the response of one cell in awake animal. If you increase concentration, the peak shifts forward. By the way, I don't know any reference in awake state, so now I'm allowed to reference anesthetized state, I hope. But that's, I couldn't find any reference in awake state to this simple fact that order activity shifts with the concentration for the shorter latencies. The question of affinity is more complicated, and we actually try to approach this in a very rigorous manner, but it's a subject of a different talk. I wouldn't talk about it now, but basically we try to record from the mitral cells connected to specific glomerulus where we know the affinity. And we try to understand if this is actually true. The story is a little bit more complicated. Ask me later. And but it's a good assumption. It's a good assumption, what I'm saying. Okay, so we discuss how the code can be read, how the code can be built. So the sequence of the initial granular are preserved. The reading the code, we heard the talk yesterday by Kevin, but the conceptually it's quite straightforward. My glomerular excite a bunch of mitral cells. Mitral cells project to the piriform cortex and have some convergence on the cells in the cortex. And those who fire first are the main one and set up the scene for other. Due to the inhibition in the cortex, you kind of can ignore this. This is the other identity. Those who got excited first are the one that sets up the identity. And the rest are ignored, and you heard the talk yesterday from Kevin. Now, there's interesting consequences of this. So imagine I really jump up the concentration. Then you squeeze in the short window more than 2-3 glomeruli in this case. Then you excite simultaneously not one but two cells here. Then order identity will change. Oops, sorry. Order identity will be different. And that's actually psychophysically relevant phenomena. So order change its identity at high concentration. So banana, amino acetate at low concentration smells like banana, at high concentration smells like nail polish. So this is a real phenomena. I don't know how to quantify it in mice. So what about mixtures? Assuming that one order is coded by the sequence of glomeruli CATMW, and if the first number of glomeruli is number 3, this is order CAT. And the second independent order is the order by the same idea is the order DOG. So now if we present them together in a very simple model, if we present them together and the glomeruli don't interact at the first level, then the mixture will be completely different, KAD. Maybe that's explain why we're so poor in identifying components in the mixture. And now I'm in danger of having fight with Venki, but I would be very happy to address this issue because this is somehow a slightly different problem of identifying component on the mixture or removing one component from the focusing on one component, and would be very happy to answer on this question later. The components of the mixture, the identity, this is a kind of other object, this is your new object, is different based on the concentration of individual components, and if you change concentration, that became new order identity. So that's the basis of all other object, order gestalt. When you inhale an order, that's what you sense, the first few glomeruli, and you ignore the rest. We're very poor at that. Actually, this was a very beautiful paper done by, in 2008, by Zach and Uchida and Zach Manin, that they actually demonstrated that in a mixture, you know, you identify mixture independent of the concentration. They train an animal to discriminate different mixtures. So this concentration of one order, concentration of another order. They train the animal to discriminate different mixture, and this was the decision point. So every point here, animal go left, at a point here, animal went right. And then in a probe trial, they change the concentration and they see that the decision line doesn't change. That proves, and actually doesn't change when you lower concentration, and the same thing doesn't change when they increase concentration. That proves that the decision line, your identity of the mixture of the boundary, is concentration dependent. That fully corresponds to the idea that they're basically paying attention to the first few glomeruli that are set up by the ratio. So they know the ratio, they go, they don't need to read the rest of the code. That probably variable. What about information capacity of the code? Well, this is basically no problem because if we have n total number of glomeruli, we have all receptor types, if we have p number of relevant glomeruli, so the combinatorial capacity of this code is n to the power of p divided by p factorial. Actually, I don't believe that we have mechanism to see the sequence of the glomeruli. So whoever activates in the first window, that's the code. So the sequence in the first window probably are non-relevant, but we don't know it yet. In this case, if p equals 6 and don't, the number is only because then we can, that animal can sense trillion orders. I don't know what is p, but p is small. I mean, it may be 5, 4, you know, 6, maybe 10, but it's not 100. It's not, when you're looking on the olfactory bulb image, it's not all the glomeruli. That's the point. Mice even, you know, even worse than to the power of 15. I'm not sure that we need really on this capacity. The capacity is kind of byproduct of something else that we need to understand in the field. The crucial point is why we actually talking about that this is relevant and the rest is irrelevant. And I invite you, and probably many of you visited the poster, so I basically repeat what Chris was presenting in the poster. This is a work that is done by Chris Wilson. Please talk to him. Let me briefly repeat the experiment. And the idea is that information is relevant and the rest is irrelevant. And in general, when we're talking about order identity, it's very hard to prove because I cannot ask an animal what does it, is it apple? I can ask this animal if it's more apple or more orange, kind of very simple tasks. So we decided to do this simple task. This is approximation of the big problem because, you know, when we train an animal to speak, maybe it will be easier. So animal is doing two alternate force choice order discrimination, order A versus order B, but we care about that this need to, that animal need to make a decision based on order, what we think order identity, so we scramble concentration. We scramble concentration in two orders of magnitude, so in each trial, animal see one of 10 stimuli, but the decision made based on the order identity, in this case on the color but not on the intensity. So green order versus red order, left or right. During the task, we measure the sniffing pattern by putting cannula into the mouse nose. This is a schematic of the sniffing pattern, so mouse exhaling then inhaling, and we trigger our order delivery valve by exhalation, and we measure the odor response with the ionization detector, and we know that mouse start inhaling, that we measure in this space what the concentration of the instantaneous concentration of the odors, it's very reproducible, so we know what mouse is inhaling, the odor reach the concentration, and we know which concentration, which odor getting to the mouse nose. And for the right order, for the red order, it goes to the right and leaks, and for the left, order A to the left, and so on. Now, during this task, we perturb the odor identification with stimulation of channel rhodopsin. We take channel rhodopsin animal that has channel rhodopsin and YFP in all olfactory receptors. This is epithelium of the olfactory bulb. The animal was produced by Tom Boza. Currently it's available. It's knocked into MP locus. We put two fiber optics. Chris put two fiber optics into two nostrils of these mice, and we stimulate them. We stimulate a large portion of the receptor, a big portion of the receptors. We don't know what portion. We know that it's a lot. But we time it. We time it very precisely. We know that we start stimulating sometime after the onset of inhalation. And the logic is that if at the beginning, if the part at the beginning of the sniff cycle is important, animal won't be able to do the task. If we move the mask back later, animal will recover the ability to discriminate two odors. And the main question, what is this time? So that's the logic of the experiment. First of all, I need to say that when we start the experiment, we were not sure that we will be able to mask an odor with light. We cover some of the receptors, odor is extremely, the presentation redundant, so maybe the rest of the receptors will actually be sufficient to get information. By the way, very important part that we do this experiment, we do this presentation only a small subset of trials, the probe trials and two intermediate concentration, tenfold difference between them. Animal does not learn the mask. Animal learn the task, and occasionally we put the we probe trials with the mask and see what the animal performs. So the result for the low concentration without mask is shown here. It's about 92%. Animal perform this task very, very well. Result with the mask is the latency of the mask is shown here. So at a low short latency below 60 milliseconds, the mask substantially decreased the performance to the level below 60%. It doesn't, animals still can do it, but it substantially affect the behavior. And above 100, approximately 100 milliseconds, it is recovered performance.
Could you make that 0.5
is chance? Say it again?
0.5
is chance. 0.5 is chance, yes. Sorry, 50% is chance level, 0.5. Now, what we predicted before, that if you increase concentration, that the processing shifts forward. So, and that's exactly what's happening if we do it for the higher concentration, the mask effect is shifting more left. If we define the threshold by the midpoint of this curve, you can see the concentration dependencies for different. It's shifted from 70 for the low for the high concentration to 80 to the high concentration. So what actually we prove here that the initial part of the sniff cycle is sufficient for auto discrimination. We didn't prove it that it's necessary, but it's sufficient. So now we try to make an argument that it's not only sufficient, but it's also necessary. So maybe animals using this can use this activity, and it's not necessary to identify the order. Maybe you don't need to pay attention to the beginning, you can pay attention to the end. So what we do, we shortened, so the idea was if we shorten the light mask, and our model is shown here. The order identity is defined by the first activity. We present the light mask at the very beginning and very short. It will be sufficient to destroy the order. So the early activity is necessary to identify the order. So we decided to present very, very short mask. And the result is...
Yes.
No. It's a catch trials. Animals train, that's what I try to say, that animals train on the task with 10 different stimulus, and occasionally we do catch trials. Exactly. That's very important, because actually we know that animal can learn anything, and including the discrimination with the mask. And with a short mask, the performance almost the same. It's actually slightly two different orders, but with a short mask, the qualitatively it's exactly the same picture. So short mask is enough to screw up the behavior, to damage the behavior here, and when a short mask is here, it's doing it in the full performance. Mask is two pulses of 10 milliseconds apart. Instead of the long mask that was, 500 milliseconds. Well, is it really necessary? So the argument is maybe mask itself. So we know that it's necessary on the level of the receptors. So we blast very briefly the receptors, and if you blast at the beginning, you animal can perform. That means that that portion of the receptor activity is necessary. Now, maybe mask effect is long. Maybe we cannot do this. And for that, Chris recorded activity of mitral cells. And this is just two typical response of two mitral cells in response to the same order. This one responded at this moment of time. This is a little bit later. This order in response to channel rhodopsin, we have mask. Now we have this animal, exactly the same animal, so with the fibers in the nose. When we present the mask, this cell was inhibited. This has very strong excitation to the order. Now, what happening when you present mask and order? And you see that this response has been inhibited, You don't see any, so you lose this information, but that kind of stays in the same way. So maybe animal can use this information to make a decision. If you train your discriminator to make a decision by the peak amplitude, maybe you can still do this. So that's exactly what we did. Imagine we trained our classifier on the some number of cells to discriminate between two orders. And I'm sorry, so the overall mask effect is shown here. So it's a mean firing rate across all population of the recorded cells. So you can see the strong effect on the first 50 milliseconds and the prolonged some kind of inhibitory response in the longer time scale. So that's the effect of the mask of the whole population. No, but that's kind of, we don't know. So what we did, we train our discriminator on a number of population activity, and we see where the information is carried by to between how we can discriminate the two orders. And each line, we start from 10 milliseconds, add extra bin, and so this you can see that if you go along the bottom line, the discrimination performance increases and reaches more or less saturation here. Now we started not from the first bin, from the second bin, third bin, and so on. So kind of later in the sieve cycle, and you can see this part of the interval is there's a lot of information. Now on the same discriminator, we train it for the unmasked trial. This information the animal is trained for, we did it for the masked trial. So we didn't change our hyperplanes of the discriminators. We just used the data from the mask trials. And we can see that we wiped out all information below 150 milliseconds. But then the mask, you know, you have this information. You have this a lot of information here. It's about 80%. So information about the same information is somehow present. So in an optimal sense, animal could have been using this information to do the discrimination. However, it does not. However, it does not. That means what the conclusion of this experiment is that the first information not only sufficient to make discrimination, it's also necessary. So it's we're trying to make a statement that this is the order identity information. It's sufficient and necessary to encode order identity. Very briefly, okay, I have a few minutes, I just very briefly. So coming back to my previous story. So we recorded many cells before, and this is the diversity of the responses in awake animals. Some cells respond inhibitory, excitatory. I skip it very quickly, I come back to this picture. So coming back to this picture, so what's going on here? So what we show, where's our important timing, is somewhere here. So the activity happening, this is where the sigmoid function going up. It may be a little bit high depending on the concentration. Here we don't have any information over concentration, but that's important timing. So that was the action happening. What's happening here, we still don't know. Why the cells are firing, what they're doing to the cortex, we don't know. So that's where the sparse code is. Check where the sparse code is, and a very small number of cells. The rest is, we don't know. Similar results have been actually shown on the glomerular level by Matvachovic work. They record the activity responses of the glomerular in many glomerular, many orders, and recorded the onset of the calcium response. You can see the distribution. This is histogram, this cumulative distribution, way here. Only small number of glomeruli, I don't know, 10% of all distribution, we need to do the order discrimination. So I leave you with the question, what cells are responsible? Is this artifact? What's going on? This is, you know, why do we need the activity? Maybe it's just artifact. So one of the conclusion is that maybe we just cannot make ideal receptors. You know, you have 5 receptors for apple, we have 5 receptors for lemon, it's enough. But the problem is that we cannot make 5 receptors for apple that would not respond to high concentration of the lemon, so they fire, and that's cleaning up. That's cleaning up partially in the cortex, in the bulb, and finally in the cortex, thanks to Kevin's work. So But the role of inhibition may be different here. It may be just to find the right temporal window and adjust the timing in order for cortex to be able to pay attention better on this time. It's very speculative, but it's open for discussion. So let me just summarize. We propose the primacy coding that is the coding of order identity that is concentration variant. We have very simple, oversimplified mechanism for forming the code, mechanism for reading the code. The code is consistent with some known behavioral phenomena, and a small temporal window is sufficient and necessary for order identification. So that's the main conclusions. Thank you very much. That's the work is the main hero in this work is Chris Wilson, who did fantastic experiment. My lab moved recently from Genelia to 2 years ago from Genelia to NYU. These are people who helped a lot in the discussion. A lot of interaction, a lot of inspiration comes from discussion with Alex Kulakov, Tom Bozo, my long collaborator, and we are here. Thank you very much.
I was wondering if you've tried the strategy of putting the mask with a negative latency. That seems like that would be a good way to deal with the problem and see how far back you have to go before there's no problem with discrimination.
We discussed this a lot, and probably this experiment need to be done, but until we knew the duration of the mask, we didn't know how to interpret the result. The result with the identifying the effect, what is the duration of the mask, what I showed with discriminant analysis, we could not interpret it. So we thought about doing this, but the fact that we move it, maybe mask is 2 seconds, so moving back wouldn't tell us anything. Now when we knew, we have the method of defining the duration of the mask with using discriminant analysis, now we can interpret this, and that's actually, I think, need to be done. There's some difficulties because it's hard to measure negative times because we have a trigger on that, so we need to do more maybe trials, maybe. But you're right, but that was contingent with our notion of the duration of the mask.
So one of the key elements of it, Dima, was contained in one of your early slides where you showed the curve of concentration increasing,
yep.
And then this leads to glomeruli H and K, I think, going off first every time. This problem can also be solved, as you know, with a inhibitory imposition that, as it's relieved, leads to the most strongly driven glomeruli firing first, and then the next most strongly firing second. So then you get a latency converted from strength of input. This was, I think, Hopfield's idea initially in '95. My question is, do you have evidence that concentration does increase like this during the sniff? Or is this a conjecture that maybe there's literature on it? Just wanted to ask you about that.
So there's two aspects. First of all, we don't propose that that's the unique mechanism for creating sequencing. The basic mechanism exists intercellularly. So if you present a high concentration for the same affinity, the cell fire earlier. It's the same effect like in retina, high intensity evoke the action potential early. It's exactly the same thing in this literature on the cellular temporal dependence on the concentration. So you bring another idea that has been proposed with a local food potential. This is just the model that we can propose, and that's actually kind of it's convenient. It's convenient. Now, related to actual data, it's very hard to measure concentration in the nose. There was a modeling data from Kai Zhao at Monell Chemical Sensor Center. And yes, it is going gradually. It depends on many factors like heterophobicity, diffusivity. But conceptually, the same. How else it can be, basically? You know, when it just pure fluid dynamics, when you're inhaling, and you have diffusion through your mucus, so there should be some gradient. The numbers, we don't know exactly.
So, So the key way the primacy is sort of different from other sort of latent symbols is that the order of glomeruli is not significant as long as they're within the first P glomeruli, right? So, I mean, you've done experiments where you kind of gave patterned light stimuli for discriminating, right? Wouldn't that be the most direct way of figuring out whether P is 4, 5, 6, or 7 and train them on a combination of 7 or 8 glomeruli in succession and then just drop off the later ones?
So there's two aspects here. So first, we can increase capacity of this code by basically saying that order of the first glomerulus is important. Until we see any need for that, I don't see we need to talk about
it.
Just a second. So basically the code is good enough already, so I think about the simpler version. Maybe the factor is important. The second thing, we can train an animal for many things. We can train the animal to discriminate timing, we can train the animal to pay attention to later part. Actually, we stimulate a single glomerulus late in the sniff cycle in the presence of the odor. You can train the animal easy. That's not the problem. And the ability of animal to discriminate minor temporal timing, it does not prove that that's how animal choose
their identity. I meant actually training them maybe on an artificial odor being a light pattern like you've done
yeah.
before. And just too inspired by normal odorants, two light patterns, but then in catch trials, leave out the later ones, or in catch trials, alter the order of the first ones. And your prediction would be that then, particularly if you train them on something like detect the odd one out or so, you would predict that they wouldn't naturally detect them.
Yes, absolutely. This is a hard experiment. We're actually trying to do this, but that's a longer story. It's not so simple. I completely agree, but it's already, so if this timing inside of this window is important, it's maybe secondary for now.
To give you the most important parameter, P, right? The number of...
Yes. We try to kind of think how to do it, but we don't know yet the strategy that will answer this directly. Okay, but you're right. Okay.
So, Dima, I have two questions and maybe a comment if we have time. There's two scenarios that you can consider. One is that you have, say, two odors activate the same set of glomeruli, but in slightly different temporal
yes.
sequence. And now when you present mixtures, then your prediction would be that it's either be perceived as the first odor or a second odor, but never as a, configurable, right? And the second scenario is that you have an odor activate, say, two glomeruli at very early stage, and a second odor activate those for whatever reason, chemistry in the nose, whatever, activate at the latest time. So now when you mix them, you almost have to predict that the first odor has to mask the second. Right? So those you can really test and using imaging to look at those mixtures.
You're absolutely right. So I think that in a mixture, the hydrophobicity of the odor may play a role, because a mixture may be more hydrophobic will be later than hydrophilic. However, what is unknown here, we don't know affinity of the receptors. So we can always, the system may always, on an evolutionary time scale, compensate that for hydrophobic odor, make more sensitive receptors. So I don't have the tools to really test it, because I don't, for any given odor, and please, if you know the way how to find the most sensitive receptors, either through genetics or through, any tricks, please, that's the... I'm talking in length with here. If we give me two orders for which I do know the most sensitive receptors, I do know, then this experiment makes complete sense. If I don't know, maybe it's just compensated by sensitivity, because we don't have a control of that.
Okay, good. So if you do the mask experiment with your M72 channel rhodopsin instead of OMP, would you see the same? I mean, would that be a cleaner experiment to test the hypothesis?
We're trying. We have some preliminary data. We don't have yet statistical significance. And we're getting into a very interesting point here, because I don't think that every combination are present. When I talk about the combinatorial capacity of this code, my strong belief the combinatorial real capacity of this code is significantly lower. And just the wiring diagram doesn't allow any abstract combination to be part of the same identity. I think that the system is strongly restricted by connectivity, and it strongly reduces its, you know, in spite of all this, you know, modern ideas of sparseness, I think that that's a limiting factor. It can be relearned, the system can adapt to different stuff, but what we are afraid of, and it's pure speculation, that you kind of need to present another and specific glomerulus that at least can be part of the same identity. If it's some random kind of, if I ask you to recognize two faces, but blink light here, it would not distract you. I need to blink light in the eyes or something like this, so you cannot recognize the faces if your recognition would be by shape of eyes. That's my idea. So I don't know where M72 standing relatively to the relevance. Is it part of the different gestalt? But we're trying to do it.
Is it the first p orders or a time window?
We don't know.
So I'm not sure if it's a question or a comment, but this model essentially predicts that if olfactory receptors were like trace amine receptors and they had very high affinity for ligands, you wouldn't be able to have a combinatorial code, correct? Because if you have a very high affinity, you would immediately inhibit every other glomerulus and you wouldn't...
That's a number game. I hear what you're saying. But there's a number game because you don't need many glomeruli to identify some amines.
Right.
So it's a combinatorial code, but with smaller numbers.
But if you have a smaller combinatorial code, eventually yes. You will be able to detect fewer orders, correct?
So maybe that's the solution. When the order is very important, let's say, for Turing, you do very sensitive glomeruli, it always fires the first, and you kind of don't care about the rest of the repertoire because you know that it's one of the most sensitive.
Essentially, that's where I was heading to. That, how do you select for receptors that are not very good receptors for ligands that are essential for survival? For example, if 10-19 receptor has a picomolar activity affinity for fox urine, this mouse will always escape and be selected for, right? So I'm just trying to think if there must be some type of connection between the ability to making weak receptors with the way you regulate them or you traffic them to the membrane. There must be some connection between that allows for the selection of this weaker receptor system.
Evolution, that's called evolution.
Just to clarify, I think if the receptor is weak for every order that the animal ever encounters in life, it probably would be selected out. Is that your question?
Yes.
Yeah, I would imagine you're
related. Okay. Maybe I didn't understand the question. Sorry. Actually, we Alex has a very interesting ideas about evolution of the receptors. That basically, I was always puzzled in relationship to your question. I was puzzled if the order is identified by many receptors, knocking out one receptor doesn't actually produce any phenotype. So the prediction from here, from the primacy model, when you reduce number of important receptors, you increase the importance of individual receptors in order identity, and in addition, an evolutionary time scale, there is an order for which every receptor, so for each receptor, there is an order in this universe for which it's primal. And that's what keeps this receptor intact. So if receptor is not primal for some orders, it will probably evolve out. But that's speculation, you know, but that's kind of, this is just maybe chatting with Alex, he has very interesting ideas about that.
Did, just a couple of hopefully quick ones. First one, I'll ask you the same question I asked Kevin. That is, as you boost concentration higher and higher, the gap, temporal gap between activation of the most selective and the next selective should decrease. So essentially, if you have a 100-fold increase in odor concentration, it would seem that you would have about a 100-fold decrease in that delay. And I wonder how much of a challenge to your model that phenomenon is. Second one is just, I'm wondering if it's worth doing the same experiment you've just done in a non-catch trial mode, that is actually try to train the mice to carry out this task. Because in the sense, if this really is the, if this really is how the code is read out, then it would seem that the animal should never really be able to learn the task, even given enough practice. But that may be a longer discussion. So pick either one of those questions.
So the quick answer to your question, so I think that, again, this is pure speculation, our ability to discriminate odor. So first we detect something, and the threshold for detection is usually lower than the threshold for identification. So when you really decrease concentration, you cannot identify the odor. Something is present. But detection happens above some concentration, and then change of identity happens on a very high concentration, on a high concentration, when you squeeze more glomerulus, more activity to the shorter window. So this is, I mean, it's hard to test all these problems, but yeah, that's what we're thinking about it, but that's kind of a very vague answer to your question. The second question is more provocative, more philosophical. So we know that we can train an animal to identify activity of this. That's not, so we did experiment with shining light on a single glomerulus in the presence of other odors, and it can learn. My answer to that will be very provocative. This is your temporal fovea. That's where you used to look at it. I can train you, look at me and tell me the color of this chair. You can do this, I can train you, but that's not your normal processing. That makes the problem difficult because you can train an animal to use peripheral vision. But that's the main, that's the foveal.
So essentially two notions of necessity. So you're testing one notion.
Yes. So yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Perfectly lead to my comment. I think because everybody in the field use some kind of reinforced training. Two choices, one of the one that used most widely. But to sort of understand the coding, I think we also need to have ways of addressing that naive animals without those reinforced training, overtrain animals to discriminate odors. And, you know, we have tried to do this with naive animals, but, you know, it has its own flaws. So I think it's a comment for the field in general. Maybe we should find ways to be able to come up with behavior tests to discriminate, to test discrimination in naive animals more efficiently.
I know, Hitoshi may give some examples, but Tom, we actually published the work with, Tom did the work, and I was actively discussing it with him, that, you know, when we knock out one glomerula, you change the aversion. This is native behavior, the importance of one single glomerulus. Now we have very preliminary data that that's actually that's probably the primal glomerula. TAR4 receptor for PA odor is the primal, one of the primal receptors. That's why knocking it out changed the behavior. And this is native behavior, it's not trained. It's hard. He used tons of mice.
Yeah, so I think that's for aversion or
right. Yeah, no, it's hard. Please, if you know some idea that we can implement some kind of a similar strategy, I would be very happy.
I should read his papers, no?
Oh, thank you. Yeah. But how to implement masking, how to implement this stuff. That's right.
Yeah, I think we should, I mean, this has been fantastic. I'm sure the discussions can go on for a long time, which perhaps they should over coffee, though. Thank you. We'll be back. 11 o'clock, please.